If somebody's saying, oh, well, I get this from waste, what type of waste? Or, oh, it comes from plant-based. Well, is that plant-based actually coming, being grown? Are we taking land away from fuel? Think about the macro problem, because we often get a little bit arrogant and think about textiles and apparel as its own little piece, but it's actually part of the whole world, that it's also part of a big ecosystem. So recycled bottles sounds great, but if you're taking bottles out of a closed loop bottle industry and then putting them into garments that then we're mixing with lycra that we then can't recycle, and it's not infinitely recyclable, probably for the planet as a whole, maybe not the best, right?
Welcome to Chase Your Dreams, a podcast for fashion entrepreneurs who want to build a purposeful and profitable clothing business so they can make a living doing what they love. I'm your host, Glynis Tao, an apparel business consultant and SEO specialist with 20 years apparel industry experience. I'm also a mom to a wonderfully energetic little boy named Chase.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Chase Your Dreams podcast. Today, I have fabric expert Ruth Kelly to talk about how to source fabric sustainably. Hello, Ruth.
Hey, Glenn, it's lovely to see you. Thank you so much for having me here with you today. I'm very excited to share a little bit of what I've learned and continue to learn on my journey. Is thank you for calling me an expert. I like to say I'm an expert beginner, if that doesn't sound too cheesy. Maybe I can just briefly introduce myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's so nice to have you here today, and thanks for joining me on this podcast. And I think we've known each other for a few years. And as I was getting ready early, I was trying to think about where we had met. And I was like, was it at this event, at that event? And I was like,
I think I totally fangirled you, Glynis. I think I probably totally.
It was at Apparel Camp.
Was it?
I think it was the
okay, so
Apparel
still,
Camp
I
that I first
do.
met you. It was at the buffet. We were getting food. Of course, me, you know, I'm always like around the food. And I remember, seeing you and just going, hello, introducing myself. So yeah, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about your background in the fabric industry?
Yeah, well, I got into fabrics from an early age, from when I was about 13 years old and was always making clothes. And that really got my interest into different fabrics. You know, when you're handling them of, oh gosh, why does this one handle like this? Why does this feel like this? And so I went and did my degree in textile technology at Manchester University in England, and was lucky enough to graduate when there was still a textile industry and apparel industry in the UK. And so I started off working for a garment maker that made lingerie, it made swimwear, it made sportswear for the likes of Marks and Spencers and Nike. And yeah, I just loved it. I loved working with the designers, loved working with the factory and all those challenges of the supply chain and trying to find fabrics that perform and look great and feel great. And that career led me to 5 years in Hong Kong, 2 years in Sri Lanka. I then moved all the family lock, stock and barrel to Vancouver and worked for Lululemon for 7 years as fabric development director. So that was great fun, working in a different part of the world and a different part of the supply chain or supply network, as I like to call it. And for the last 4 years, I have been trying to put those skills and some of those learnings into work by helping different brands and companies with all of their fabric sourcing and development innovation questions.
Right. And Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your current business right now, the name of your company.
Yeah, so I am the founder of Weft X Warp Fabric Consultancy Limited, which I've been running for 4 years now. And I'm also a partner in a UK business, which is called Seams with double S. And I work with a group of consultants over there. They're doing some really cool stuff in circularity. Seems a bit strange. I'm in Vancouver, the rest are in the UK, and it's a very Scottish-based business. But it's this lovely ability of making things locally in Scotland and also connecting the industry, connecting maker to manufacturer to the end consumer.
And how, I'm just curious, how did the relationship develop, like between you and the Seams people in the
Yes.
UK?
Yeah, so Diane, the founder, her and I, it was through COVID, one of those great things that happen when you're at home and you reach out to people on LinkedIn, and we jumped on a conversation kind of similar to this. And I was like, hey, I'm over here and my background is brand and strategy, your background is materials and innovation. Let's work together. And it blossomed from there. We have a magazine. We make some products and we do consultancy as well. So it's a real complement to, working on your own, which can be lonely sometimes, right? Having come from a background where you're always part of a design team. And whereas I think it's important to be challenged and to have that human interaction.
Yes, I agree so much. I mean, same with myself, right? As working as independent consultants. Yeah, it's a bit of a transition. Like, how did you find it at first, going from Lululemon to your own practice?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And I think I can answer that in a couple of ways. I think, first of all, you have to work a lot harder at networking. It's not just there at the water cooler. And that relates also to the suppliers. We were very fortunate that although we're tucked up in Vancouver, it's a beautiful destination, and a lot of our fabric mills and suppliers would love to come to Vancouver. So we were, often first point. A port of call for them when they wanted to come and show us the new innovations and what's new and great. Whereas you're not necessarily on top of mind when you're on your own. So you have to work a lot harder at that. And there's some good things because it's awesome working with lots of people. But, if you are an extrovert like myself and you love it, you have to remember then, okay, we need to go and get your head down and get some work done, right? So it's nice to have that time to think and to not be constantly interrupted. But yeah, then you lose that lovely balance of sometimes of just those impromptu meetings where you're sort of riffing ideas backwards and forwards. So yeah, you have to work hard at getting that hybrid.
Yeah, certainly does take a little bit of work getting into that sort of, I guess creating some sort of structure for yourself because you're not so much like, driven or directed by coworkers or a team or management or somebody telling you what to do, having those regular meetings and stuff. I think, for myself as well, I felt like I needed to be more disciplined that way and having more of a structured routine. And
Absolutely. And of course, you've got clients' deadlines now, so a different set of de deadlines. So, absolutely, all those skills you learn in terms of time management, project management, you apply them to your own business.
yeah, no, this is great talking to you both, about your fabric expertise, but also as a business owner as well, because I have a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs who listen to this podcast, and it's just great insight to hear just what other business owners, founders, and how they run their business and how they operate. So,
Boundaries. I think boundaries is my number one. I'm still working on them. Not always the best. It's a tough
yeah, the
one. Yeah.
boundaries in terms of what?
your own personal boundaries of what you will and won't do. So, for example, if family time is critical for you and you don't want to do calls on a Sunday, then you don't do calls on a Sunday. And it, yes, one can fall into the trap of it's my own business, I need to do this, but you also need to educate your clients as to what is acceptable and what isn't. Yeah, I'm sure you have the same, Glynis, right? But you get to choose the boundaries. You get to say what they are, but you also have to enforce them. It's no good having the boundaries and then not enforcing them.
Yes, agree 100%. Okay, so let's go back to talking about your interest in sustainable fabric sourcing. I guess it's more fabric in general. Do you deal strictly with sustainable fabrics, or is that just a part of your business practice?
Well, it's interesting because I've changed how I think about this. I remember going to the trade shows sort of back in the day, and there was always this kind of like, oh, and here's the little sustainable sort of section. And there were always these grotty sort of linen, hippie, hop sack things that were just kind of there, right? And you're kind of like, oh, okay, great. Like, not interesting, especially because my background is very much based in the world of technical and performance. And, now it's, you can't separate the two. Innovation is sustainability. We have to be sustainable about everything we do. So I think my definition of sustainability is wrapped around respecting resources. Because unless you are naked, nothing is 100% sustainable, in my view. So, yes and no, is everything I do sustainable? Yes, because I believe very firmly in creating great product that respects resources and that is durable. And sustainability is such a multifaceted aspect that the answer is that it always depends, and nothing's 100% sustainable. And on the other hand, nothing is, one could argue, is 100% or shouldn't be 100% of a pollutant. And maybe we can get into that and argue and debate that a bit, but just throwing that out there.
So yeah, that's interesting because how you define what is sustainable to you, and that is respecting the resources. Because I mean, yeah, we could really get into a whole technical debate of whether or not, are natural fibers sustainable? Is recycled polyester sustainable? What is sustainable exactly?
I know. Here's a bit of a secret shame, but sometimes when, especially in conversations with new potential clients, and sorry, clients, if anyone's listening to this, people say, "Oh, Ruth, I want to do everything sustainable," and sometimes like my heart just sinks, and that's not because, and I feel bad saying that because that is the right thing to say. I mean, we all need to be challenging things, but sometimes there's a naivety of approach to that, especially with new brands. It's a very complex situation. There's always going to be some pragmatism and some degree of compromise, be it on price, be it on design, be it on how sustainable it is, be it on performance. You can't have everything. You have to be prepared to flex. And then, of course, always keep pushing and iterating to make it better. But sometimes people, their expectations are very high and very unrealistic of where we are in the world today. And there's also a lot of hard work that you have to personally take on to learn. I'm still learning. I'm still every day, like, it's like, oh my goodness. You do some research and you turn a rock over and you think, oh God, I've answered one question and I've actually just created 20 more that I don't know the answers to. It's hard.
Yeah. So what are some of the common misconceptions that you've seen people have around sustainable fabrics?
I see people making very polarized statements. Things like cotton is good, polyester is bad. And yes, in some instances it is, but that seems to be a big one. This sort of lumping all everything that's natural is good and everything that's synthetic based is bad. I think I said this to you before, Glynis. I like to say I'm fiber agnostic, which means that every fiber has pros and cons, both in the way it performs and in the way it's manufactured, in the way it's used, in the way it's cared for, and then its end of life. So it's a huge, complex situation. You know, think about if you want to go and run a marathon. You know, I've seen people say, I only want to, work out in cotton. That's great until you go into a high sweat environment. You know, you would never want to use cotton in that, a cotton pair of shorts. It would just be horrendous. So polyester is best in that moment. So again, respecting your resources. And that's just from a performance point of view. I mean, we haven't even got into the whole debate of the use of cotton. We haven't talked about organic cotton. Still only 1% of the world's cotton is organic. We haven't even talked about, polyester recycled versus taking bottles from a closed loop bottle industry and then putting them into a recycled poly that might be in an item that's fast fashion and then thrown away.
It
It's
is very
just
complex
so much
when it comes
complexity.
to textile and circularity of life cycle, right? Of the
Yeah.
of
And I
the
think
of textile.
one thing we were schooled at Lululemon is the why we made this. That's a great way of looking at it. Why is that product in existence? Because the world doesn't need another t-shirt, right? It doesn't need another pair of jeans. I mean, I think Glenys, you had the same anecdotal information that I had at an event a couple of weeks ago, where the speakers were talking that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Glenys, if I remembered it correctly, that if the world today stopped all of its garment manufacturing, there would be enough garments already in existence to clothe every person on the planet for the next 20 years.
I remember that exactly. Yeah, you just said it
So when you think,
perfectly. And I was thinking that exact same thing as well, you know? So does the world really need more products when we
and
already
how.
have enough out there, right? So the question is then, what do we do? How do we balance this between sustainability and commerce?
Yeah, and I think it's trying to break that cycle of this linear take, make, throw away, because that isn't natural. That isn't how nature work. You know, nature, as we know, works in cycles. And so for me, this respecting your resources, if we've taken the resources, be it natural, synthetic, whatever we've taken, and then we use all of our effort and energy to make something that is durable. It has been really thought out in terms of, is that the best design, materials, trims, everything that's going to make that the best garment that then can last a lifetime, or as long as it is, it can be. I mean, a pair of underwear is going to, next to the skin is going to be very different from a waterproof, breathable jacket. But what we see so much in our society is that usability is based on trends and on fashion, and it's aesthetically no longer viable at end of life. Not that it's physically at end of life. So, to me, that we want to keep it in that state. Well, for the longest time. So the more I look at, I'm by far no expert in life cycle analysis, but everything seems to point to keeping something in its current state for as long as possible. And then you go to, okay, we can't repair it anymore. I can't gift it. Okay, can we recycle? If, you know, if we can't, and then it has to go back to landfill, then, or however we dispose of it, how are we going to do that to keep that circle? And there's no one ideal circle. It's like in nature. Nature has many different circles, and the way it uses everything, circulates everything. So we don't need one solution. And so the more I look into it, the more I've realized we need lots and lots of different solutions because, yeah, realistically, humans wear clothes for practical comfort reasons, but, you know, they make us feel great. We're not going to get over that, but can we get some kind of a compromise in there where we're not over-consuming, but we're not expecting everybody to just wear the garments that they've got in the closet for the rest of their lives because, well, we wouldn't have jobs. But I just, you know, throughout human history, that's never happened. And I don't think it's going to, do you?
So much has changed in our industry just in the last, you know, 10, 20 years. I mean, the topic of sustainability wasn't even talked about back 20 years ago, I guess, when I was still in university. There was no such thing as fast fashion either. So this is a fairly recent thing that's taken place, maybe in the last 15 years, I would say, but it feels like it's accelerating a lot quicker and contributing to the climate crisis as well, you know, because fashion being so polluting and the amount of toxins and dyes and all this stuff goes in to our waters. I mean, is there even a way like of stopping this? Because we got on one hand companies and organizations who are really, you know, taking a stand against, you know, what's going on, speaking out and doing something about it. Whereas on the other side, we still have these fast fashion companies and this one company, which I shall not name, and they're just pumping out like all this clothing, you know, every few weeks or whatever, coming out with new product, new collections. So, you know, I just feel like we're sort of at this point where is it going to go one way or the other? Want to get, yeah, sort of what your take is on that.
Oh gosh, lots to unpack there, Glynis. Yeah, there's a couple of ways I can answer this. I think end consumer, and we're all consumers, you know, lots of people who work in the fashion apparel industry are consumers as well. I'm very encouraged by a lot of the younger generation and the questions that they're asking. And I think the more that we can do that and educate people and get them to ask and understand, well, why is this t-shirt like $2? Why can I get this haul of 60 garments for $30 or whatever it is? It's the true value has come down so much. You know, even when I started out in this game, you know, 30 years ago, the ratio of a price of a cup of coffee to, you know, say like a swimsuit that was made in the UK, it was, you know, a much higher ratio than it is now. And, you know, I can remember some of those conversations about when the supermarkets in the UK started to make clothing they hadn't done before, and some of their prices and offshoring and what that meant. And, you know, it's completely, you know, devalued the true cost of clothing. You know, it should be a lot more expensive. So we don't have that perception. Fun fact, I was listening to a cool podcast the other day about the Tudors. I'm a bit obsessed with history, especially being a Brit, English history and the Tudors. And apparently Henry VIII loved his clothing. And despite some of the paintings that we see, he had a very bright and vibrant wardrobe. And of course, they were using a lot of silks and there was high value. And one year alone, he spent the equivalent of £2 million just on clothing in one year.
Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, even, you know, the cost of each item was so expensive, of course, with pre-industrial revolution, everything was done by hand. But even though they were paying the workers, you know, hardly anything, it was just so labor intensive, but, you know, really treasured these items, really beautifully made and lasted and were handed down, et cetera, et cetera, which now we don't have. Although we do see, you know, there is a more of a surge to heirloom garments. You know, Patagonia doing these great articles about fleeces that people have worn, and, you know, they actually, you know, been through the adventures and then they're passed down onto the siblings. So there's a little bit of a comeback to that. But yeah, it can be soul destroying on the other hand when you see, you know, some as you were saying, these newer companies, hopefully people will start to unravel and consumers will start to really ask them the difficult questions of where some of their pieces are coming from. You know, I try to educate my, you know, my daughters when they want some of these things. Oh, why do you think it's so cheap? Right? Have you really seen the quality? Is it really going to last? And then sometimes they'll say, you know what? I want something new and different. Maybe I can go to the thrift store and see if there's something there. That might be another option. And okay, go and use it, have fun with it. And then when you're done, it can go back to the thrift store. So, you know, kind of like their own version of rental.
So we've got that fast fashion giant pushing their products and all those marketing messages to perhaps young people to make them feel like they need this to feel good about themselves or whatever. It almost feels like a drug like.
Instant
they're
gratification.
Pushing, yeah, instant gratification. But I wonder if it's a generational thing, because on the other side, like, of this argument is I'm reading that Gen Z are more conscious of the environment and, you know, in terms of choosing the types of brands, who they buy from, they really follow their values, more so than any of the other generations, you know, before them. And so I'm wondering if, I guess, it's the educating, like what you said about you teaching your daughter about making better choices. Do you think that comes, like, as part of it? Like, it's the educating part, educating the consumer, right?
Totally, totally. I've heard some interesting hypotheses as well, that as AR and things like that develop, that we'll get to a point where you can have a much more immersive experience of where those clothes were made and those fabrics were made. So rather than, you know, and it's great that we've got brands as well with open sourcing and full traceability, you know, you can go on the website or scan the QR code, but think about if you were using AR and you could actually see yourself, you know, you're fully immersed in that experience and it almost interacting, and you get that human element. So we need to tap into those stories, that emotion, because until you can put yourself in those workers' shoes and imagine yourself being there, imagine yourself having to work in this environment, do you really want that? Do you really want your money to be going just so you can have this instant gratification? And, you know, maybe there's some influencers doing some great stuff with digital assets as well. So, yeah, okay, if you are an influencer and you want this new outfit, it's not about the unboxing and the hauling and all of that. It's okay, you want to do this cool image. And there's some influencers out there who are doing some amazing stuff with digital assets who may be even, you know, different body shapes, different body types that maybe couldn't even have access to standardized clothing. And they can really play around with their creativity and identity in the digital space. So I think that's super interesting as well. You know, it makes me cross when I see people on social media, like, oh my goodness, that celebrity wore that dress, you know, before, or he wore that outfit before, or they wore that wherever. And now I'm like, that should be celebrated. Like, good on them, right? They wore that before. Awesome. That's sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
oh,
you made a really good point there. You know, why not celebrate them instead of shame them for wearing something twice? But also, you know, it's exciting, I guess, to see sort of what some of the new ways that people are going to rethink this. I also heard there's some good influencers out there who are actually, you know, educating their audience, you know, on fast fashion and teaching people, well, how to work with style up, you know, clothes that you already have in your closet instead of buying new ones. So I think, yeah, there's all those things.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's about making style and not trends fashionable.
Yes, exactly. Personal style, you know, and it doesn't necessarily need to be the latest trend, right? It's what makes you feel good.
We're getting really philosophical here, but you could argue that fashion is all linked into insecurity. It's about, you know, following a trend rather than being really grounded in your own personal style. Because wouldn't it be more fun to see like lots of different styles and what everybody
I just wanted to ask you, perhaps do you, could you give an example of maybe a brand you think that is, you know, really doing a good job in this area? You'd mentioned Patagonia. Is there anybody that?
Yeah, I think there's lots of brands that are doing good stuff. One quite close to home here that I was always impressed with are the guys at Tentry. And what I've always liked about their approach, specifically to materials, is they know that there's a lot to go at. They know that they can't have it perfect. So they've always had this, in my opinion, pragmatic approach to, let's start off, right? And they're lucky that they have some core fabrics that they use season after season, so they're able to do this, and they're able to say, okay, let's start to make that material better. That it might be this season that we, and I'm just making this up, I'm not saying they do this, but for example, we're going to move to a recycled content. Okay, we know recycled content isn't the be all and end all. They're not just doing a, you know, tick the box and then move on. Okay, now let's look at, you know, some of the chemicals that are on there. Now let's look at, oh, can we get the stretch out of a different way? So we're just got a monomer that's easy to, you know, recycle end of life. Can we look at fiber shedding? Can we, you know, so they always are trying to improve. So I think that's a really, really good approach that they've had. And they've always had a lovely way to collaborate rather than beat their suppliers over the head. So like that partnership of, yes, we know it's difficult. Can we work on this together? What can we do together? So by doing that, you almost avoid, or not avoid, I think those true partnerships are less likely to result in greenwashing, because you've had that authenticity right from the beginning. You know, the outdoor industry as well is doing a lot of great things, you know, getting rid of forever chemicals. There's been some great things that's happening there. There's some newer companies that are doing some cool things, Pangaea in the UK. I'm sure lots of people have heard of those folks over there, and they've been early adopters of some of the new fibers and the new chemicals. They've even invested in some of them, and that's one of the things that brands can really do. We are going to need a lot of new solutions and new options, and it takes a lot of money for some of these startups, that's getting to scale is very challenging. So they've done some great things, and they've not, they've also really concentrated on the style of the garments and made them appealing as well. So again, it's not, oh, you can have this and it's sustainable, but it maybe isn't as interesting. No, it's the two, it's all baked into the DNA. And I feel like there's a gazillion brands out there. So yeah, apologies if there's others that I'm not mentioning, but there's lots and lots out there.
That's great. I was just wondering, in terms of well, a couple questions in terms of like how can one assess the sustainability of a fabric, and are there any specific criteria or certifications that they can look for? What are some of the key indicators of a fabric's eco-friendliness?
Yeah, oh gosh, great question. I think yes, the looking at certification and having information from the brand as to how they've gone about verifying some of those claims, that's the sort of the key one. Now the bad news is there's lots of different certifications. Depending on what you're trying to look at, it is getting better and people are working together. But if it's organic cotton, then there are certain things that you're looking for there, be it from GOTS certification. Are you looking at BCI cotton? There's all different things there. Or is it the claim and recycled? Is it looking at a recycle standard there? So unfortunately, there's not just one certification that says, boom, this is certified. The great thing is as well for consumers, and this is where I was talking about earlier on, you have to do a bit of work and a bit of digging. So to look at that certification, they've all got information on the website. What are they looking at? Which other brands are using them? There's other certifications, maybe to look at chemicals. Bluesign is a big one out of Switzerland that is looking at all the different chemistries. But the list goes on and on. I think at one point there was like 30 or 40 different certifying bodies. Ecotex is a good one as well. That's a good one. Ecotex 100. That would be a good starting point as well to look at. So yeah.
In terms of like businesses being able to balance sustainability and costs, like how can businesses strike a balance between sourcing sustainable fabrics and managing their budget effectively? Are there cost-effective alternatives to conventional fabrics that still meet sustainability standards? Big
Yeah,
question.
I know. Gosh, and I wish I had a magic wand sometimes. Yeah, I mean the good news is in some areas the price differential has come down until it's virtually negligible, and that's all to do with supply and demand. So we think about, for example, recycled cotton. There used to be a huge difference in the price, and that is become smaller and smaller as the gap has narrowed. I think being realistic about what your target price is for a fabric and then looking at the different options within that. So, especially when I was, working for a brand like Lululemon, we were always trying to get as you should do. It's like as a consumer, if you're going to shop for a car and you've got a budget, you're going to try and get the most out of the car for the least amount of money. So you want it to look the best, you want the best paint, you want it to perform the best, you know, you want it all. So it's being again realistic about, well, how much can I really afford for this fabric? You know, and how does that relate to my final garment price? And it's all of those other processes that go in there. You know, as you know, materials, rule of thumb, take up about 50% of the FOB cost of a garment. So it's a huge piece, but obviously there's another 50% in there as well, including, you know, what your margin is, et cetera. You know, what is the final selling point of that garment? It also all goes back to my very first point about designing with end use in mind. You know, what is the solution? And consumers are often looking for solutions rather than just another t-shirt. I often say to people, because sustainability is so big, you know, pick one aspect of it that is close to your brand that you feel that you can really hone in on. So rather than trying to do everything, you know, if you were a swimwear brand, for example, there might be a natural tendency to think, well, I'm going to really concentrate on water usage because swimwear is all about water. So I want to concentrate, you know, on that. I want to look at fabrics that use less water or less dye stuffs or whatever. And, you know, and then what, you know, you can actually create your marketing story out of that rather than trying to do everything. So it's almost like having a little sustainability budget, if you like, and okay, what's the biggest bang for my buck that I can get? Where can I really move the needle?
Yeah. With the swimwear, I was just thinking about a brand who says all their swimwear materials made from recycled bottles, plastics that were found, from beaches, and they just collected all the bottles and plastic and turned it into fabric. And so that was their, I guess, the free differentiator to that brand. So it's like swimwear that's eco-friendly because they're reducing the, I guess, all the plastic that's being put into the oceans. So I think a brand's value or core values is really important. And I guess it comes to the choices that they make, right? Around what materials they decide to use to make their garments with.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Well, just one final question I want to ask you, as I know that you had done a few trade shows. There was a whole bunch of trade shows that happened earlier in the summer. Just sort of, were there any exciting technological advancements or innovations in the field of sustainable fabric production that we should be aware of? But that you've seen out there?
Yeah, there's a lot. And this is the good news. And this is, I feel, or a renaissance in terms of our industry. I haven't seen so many new and exciting companies for the last 30 years, especially in the area of new yarns. It's super exciting, you know. When I first started out in this, it was all the big chemical suppliers, the ICIs of the world, who were, you know, the corporate men in suits that you never saw, like pumping out all of this plastic, for example. you know, all the commodity traders with the cotton and the wool. And it was very much, you know, this kind of old clunky sort of bore inside of the industry, for want of a better description. And now we've got these new cool young startups. There's so many of them that we're seeing that are looking at what was waste, be it industrial waste, food waste. So really thinking about, for example, we've got people like HEIQ, Ionic, they're looking at making continuous cellulosic fibers, which is pretty cool. So, you know, going back to that problem with cotton, you know, and sweating in it, you know, I've been guilty, as lots of other fabric developers have, of blending different fibers together to try and counteract the performance attributes of one fiber over another. Now, people like HEIQ with their Ionic are actually being able to get a filament cotton, essentially cellulosic. So you get all those lovely, breathable, natural properties of the cotton, and yet now it's a filament. So in theory, you know, it's going to wick and it's going to dry faster. So maybe you don't need to blend it with a polyester. So you've got, you know, one fiber that's going to be a lot easier end of life. So things like that are really, really exciting. The downside, if you like, is it takes a lot of time and money to get them to scale. So, you know, these guys have, you know, got big investment from Hugo Boss. They have got lots of private investor, you know, money, but even though they're going to open a gigafactory in 2024, producing, they reckon, about 30,000 metric tons, that's only going to be about 0.04% of the current market share, right? And they're just one of them. But there's other people out there that are using algae. There's Keel Labs, there's Spiber using spider, you know, or a re-DNAized protein. There's Kintra. There's all kinds of people that are doing different things in both the synthetic and the natural side of things. We've, in terms of a new production process, we've got new fiber welding that are trying to improve natural fibers like cotton and wool by actually, rather than spinning the yarn, actually welding it together. There's lots of exciting things happening in the chemistry space. That's often the poor stepchild, you know, it's not seen as sexy, the chemistry side of things. But looking at softeners, looking at new durable water repellent finishes, lots happening in the stretch space. We haven't even talked about that, because that we're all hooked on stretch now and comfort, and having spandex in garments makes it really difficult end of life. Carbon capture, using that. There's, oh my goodness, like the list goes on and on. Glynis, there's so much that's out there that is super exciting. A good resource that I found recently is, if you look at Fashion for Good in their investor area, they have some amazing new technologies in there that are being invested in the fashion space. So that's a really good place to see what's new and upcoming.
Amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And yeah, it sounds
exciting. Anybody that I missed, right? Because there's a lot more of good people out there, right? Doing great stuff.
Yeah. So before we go, do you have any final advice or recommendations for our listeners who are interested in sourcing fabric sustainably?
I would say, in a nutshell, it's hard, but it's fun and it's doable. And it may seem like a huge mountain, but we can do it. My best advice is to think about the materials. Where do they come from? Ask those questions. If you're not sure, ask. There's no silly question. If somebody's saying, oh, well, I get this from waste, what type of waste? Or, oh, it comes from plant-based. Well, is that plant-based actually coming, being grown? Are we taking land away from fuel? Think about the macro problem, because we often get a little bit arrogant and think about textiles and apparel as its own little piece, but it's actually part of the whole world, that it's also part of a big ecosystem. So yeah, like we were talking earlier, Recycled bottles sounds great, but if you're taking bottles out of a closed loop bottle industry and then putting them into garments that then we're mixing with lycra that we then can't recycle, and it's not infinitely recyclable, probably for the planet as a whole, maybe not the best, right? So, yeah, I think ask those big questions and also know that you can make a difference. And just remember that it's complex. And no fabric is completely sustainable if we're not respecting our resources.
Wow. Well said. And I'll leave it at that. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
They can find me via LinkedIn. They can find me via my website, which is Weftex Warp Fabric Consultancy, or weftexwarp.com.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Ruth, for joining me here today and offering your amazing insight, knowledge, and expertise in the world of fabrics. I really appreciate you talking to me today. And, it's a complex topic, so much to go, but also I think with all the new innovation development, it's also exciting just to see where this all takes
And thank you so much, Glynis, for
us.
having me on. It was great to chat.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find me on Instagram at Glynis Tao and my website, glynistao.com. Please subscribe to Chase Your Dreams podcast if you haven't already. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others who you think this may help. And lastly, it would be great if you left a rating and review for our podcast. See you next time.